Hello again, everybody, and welcome. This is Julie Knutson with the podcast Turning the Pointing Labrador, episode number 110. And as many of you know, I don't really know how many people are that listen to this are also Facebook people. I think a fair percentage of everyone. But I had to kind of drop off the map a little bit there for a while. It's been a very interesting time. But on the Facebook page where I... For those of you that are wondering why I disappeared, I haven't quit doing any of this. But I had always posted on, I had posted several things. We have our business page where we show our clients, dogs, and winning field trials and titling and all the ribbons and, you know, showed that. And then I had this one with the Training the Pointing Labrador stuff where I would show videos of, you know, working wool with dogs or doing the swim by or even a few force fetch things on there. And apparently a group in another country was highly offended by what I was portraying and really came after me in a way that I've never really been subject to before. I mean, they absolutely inundated all of my Facebook pages, personal stuff, the business stuff, the pointing lab stuff. And they went after all of the people who had ever left reviews or had commented on things. They personally went after them. And they called my home phone and left death threats. And they also did a few of those via email. They got on our webpage and came in through there with some email stuff. With the most horrific things that I have ever heard said to anybody. You would think that I was, had been trading toddlers in a sex scheme across the oceans. I mean, it was really something. So that was a bit overwhelming. And I had to close everything down because literally there were hundreds and hundreds of posts and people that were all over that. I mean, they must have gotten their entire organization overseas together to come after it. So because of that, and they were even going after where the podcast had been shown on there, you know, about what an evil and vile human being I was. So everything sort of disappeared after that. And I had to, I've been trying to work out how I'm going to go about this again, because boy, do they have my name. They were passing my name out to everybody and stuff. So I really don't want to go through that again. So we contacted the police and they came out and we showed them the stuff. And of course, they saw the place to make sure that we weren't, you know, some dog torturing facility here. And they, you know, had a lot of suggestions on, I'm being very careful, because just because they're overseas doesn't mean they don't have an adjunct here that could do something. So for those of you in this business, I never in a million years thought that something like that could happen over somebody training dogs and not in a harmful and horrible way. just be careful. Had a lot of support from people, yes, lawyers too. Some lawyers saying, if you need some help, you know, bless you for that. And apparently a lot of other organizations and individuals have been targeted pretty harshly on the dog training and, I suppose, you know, shooting birds and all that. Because none of that is really allowed in terms of training over in the European world. Still how we do it here, at least for now. So that's an explanation. And I was told by a lot, I got some wonderful feedback on the APLA Facebook page. Everyone that did that, thank you. I genuinely appreciate the positive response. It was nice to feel after death threats. That's a new one. You know, I didn't think anything I did in the world really fit into that category. But I guess the world's a little different now. So, and then let me just tell one more quick story and I'll get on to the dog stuff, because that's why I'm pretty sure you're here. Also, then the following week or two right after that, my kennels, for anybody that's never been here, I have a kennel building in 7 kennel yards, a big thing. And we have a big 10-foot dirt berm that we literally built between the building and the kennels and the yards and all that and the highway that's on the south side of us. And one afternoon, and I had just left to go run to the grocery store, somebody on the highway with their cruise control on their vehicle fell asleep. Apparently they had an issue with that, as they told the state patrol. And so they fell asleep and they left the highway and went through the wire mesh fence that we have between our property and the highway and came across the field for 900 feet, hit the dirt berm that protects everything, and kind of did a Dukes of Hazzard and flew over the dirt berm and took out part of the 6-foot privacy fencing, one entire outside kennel, smaller kennel yard, and then the front of two entire cemented in posts for the airing yards that I have out there, just laid out three of them. Just laid them out. Fortunately, I mean, it was a real blessing that there were, it was hot. So when I left, I had put all the dogs in the inside kennels, you know, with the fan and the cooling and all that. They were all inside there because if anyone had been out in one of those yards, they could have been killed. So here's this guy in his car over the 10-foot berm, over the 6-foot fence, and crashing through all of these cemented in posts, lying squarely in the middle of all my airing yards. So that was quite a sight to see. And what I thought I kind of was being funny, but I asked the state patrol guy, did he have a British accent by any chance? I mean, are they coming at me this way? So that was exciting. And we're still in the middle of getting all the repairs done for that. By the way, he was okay. They still took him to the hospital, but he was up walking around and talking. So fortunately, he had a really very bad day, and I can't imagine, you know, waking up to hitting a dirt berm and flying through the air and landing in the middle of a dog kennel. That would really be something. So that happened also. So I'll tell you, it's been exciting in my world here lately. I've had a number of my clients, though, running the pointing lab things and the AKC things with good success. So things are good in the dog world. People are doing well with their dogs. The dogs are doing well. And that makes this stuff all worthwhile. So I'm going to get back into this again. I've been kind of busy. I mean, when you're talking to sheriffs about how to protect yourself and what's happening in the world, that's new to me. I'm just kind of a benign little person that trains dogs and, you know, thinks the world is just kind of a pleasant place. But welcome 2020. One of the other things that I'm going to talk about real quick here, and then I'll get to you and your stuff, is that my video series is done. It is just as soon as I get my bio written up and the introduction to the things, that is going to be available on teachable.com. It is a format that I was introduced to that apparently is kind of the way things are going now. So you don't buy like you used to in the old days, you know, a DVD, or you don't buy something like that. You actually go online and then access the material and have continuing access to it. And you can have it, you know, there's a variety of ways. You can have buy the whole thing or just a piece of the thing, and you can, and it's broken down into pieces. So it's not like just a video that you're watching and then you stop it. There's literally, it's just really wonderful the way that David set it up for me. So we're going to have the basic obedience section, a whole thing on just that. About all of them are roughly an hour and a half in total. So you get to see the way it's set up. The format is you get to watch me work a bunch of different kind of dogs through the same thing, basic obedience. There's another one that's on force fetch. There's another one that's on the wool conditioning. There's another one on collar conditioning. And the one that we're going to get filmed and put out there, I have to be really diligent about how I present the material, but the D chase as well. So they can be bought just singularly. You can get on there and look at it. And you can look at an individual dog going through it. You can break it down. It's a really cool thing. So I will announce that. I'm not sure where right now I can announce that because I'm still trying to kind of stay undercover a little bit. So I'll figure out a way to get that out to everybody. But it's going to be on teachable.com, and it's going to be really kind of an in-depth thing showing easy dogs and hard dogs and weird dogs, and so trying to help people, you know, look at it and be successful when they undertake these things themselves. So that's just about coming out as soon as I get all the written stuff up. So that's been working on that for a year and a half or 2 years. So I'm really eager to get that thing out. So onto what I'm going to do is talk about some listener questions that I have. had. One of the listener questions is, you know, are you still doing podcasts? So yes, I am. Just having to regroup after a whole lot of kind of funny things that are happening. So my first question is, and I'm going to start with young dogs and work through, not too much today since I've already kind of chatted on here for 10 minutes, is one more thing on puppy raising young dogs. And there seems, I've mentioned this before, seems to be really a different philosophy in how people approach dogs now compared to, you know, days of old. And I think that there's some things that are happening with dogs that I'm going to just say is problematic for the dog. So everybody loves their dogs to death, right? And they, you know, want to enjoy them and, you know, make sure that they have everything that they need and they're well taken care of. And what is missing in, I would say, 90% of the dogs that I see and the dogs that I get in is, I think, a misunderstanding in the role, you know, what this dog is. I know why people get dogs. I know why they do. They get them because they are immensely pleasurable partners. Just to have something around you all the time that just thinks you're awesome and is enthusiastic at every side of you and is just cuter than a bug's ear when you get them as puppies, right? And they're just, it's just all pleasure and nice. And it's just a wonderful thing. And they bring such a bright light into our lives. I get that. But in just like those of us who choose to reproduce, when you get a dog, in my opinion, of course, when you get a dog, it's as opposed to being a consumer of the dog and being entertained by it and tickled by it and, you know, have the attention that it gets you, all that stuff, it would be a more responsible position to be a grower and a developer and an enhancer of these dogs, just like if you have kids. You know, if you equip your kids to go do well in the life that they're going to have, that's probably a better parent than one that just says, oh, I want your life to be awesome and you can have whatever you want. That's probably not going to serve them well. And it's very much that way with puppies. And I don't know that I've ever communicated this well enough, or I don't know at all. But when people get dogs, and what I see, what I experience all the time is, and they especially retrievers, which is the majority of people listening to me, not everyone, but whatever your dog's main driving force is, they get these little dogs and they're just cute and they're energetic and they're just very affectionate and they, you know, just all over you and they like to sit on your lap and they like to sleep in the bed with you and there's all these things that they like to do. And then you give them 500 toys, right? So they have something other than the furniture to chew on. And the main thrust seems to be, what's the best food that I can possibly buy? Because they have all this cool stuff, right? With platypus and alligator stuff and all kinds of stuff that your dog normally wouldn't eat anyway, but that's a different story. So you have all the cool food and the cool toys and the neat bed, and then you take them on walks or you take them to the, oh, heaven forbid, the dog park where they really learn stuff you don't want them to learn. Nowhere in there do I see people working hard on teaching the dog how to be a student and how to be a learner in life and how to learn to function within a system that it's going to exist in. Because I get them by the time that they're becoming to become real juvenile delinquents. And so there's like, oh, let's pay a trainer and fix this thing. And you can't really always fix that. You can kind of maybe replace, you know, put some new behaviors in there. But it's very important, very important. I think that if you have these dogs, that you teach them, one, you have a role in our lives. We love you to death. But there's certain rules. And whatever these guys do most, I've said this a dozen times, whatever they do most as a puppy, whatever makes them happiest as a puppy is what grows and expands. And that's just a fact. So if the happiest part of a puppy's day is when it's out in the backyard rolling around getting belly rubs on its back from everybody and everybody's fussing over it and everybody's throwing a ball and it's just wild and crazy with no mental bearing down whatsoever, that's what grows in a dog. And so, you know, puppies should be joyful and puppies should have fun. Absolutely. Just like you and I should too. But if that is the highlight of their lives, is the loving and the petting and the playing around and the running around with other dogs, that's what grows and expands. And the part of their psyche that would be the learning part and the thinking part and the learning how to problem solve to the best of their abilities at whatever development stage they are, if that part doesn't get stimulated, doesn't get used, and doesn't get to be a part of it, then it won't be there later on when you need it to start teaching them things, or for when they have to learn. Sometimes you got to just be quiet and stay in the kennel run, or I'm going to board you, or you're going to be at the vet. And they just have a holy fit because they've never been anywhere where they didn't want to be. So, et cetera, et cetera. I just strongly encourage people that are getting puppies to really think about that. Whatever is the greatest joy of their day, whatever is the happiest thing, is what grows and expands, and everything else gets shoved out. So for me, with these performance dogs and any other dog I've ever had, the highlight of their day is always when we're going and working on something together. We may have the belly rub later on, but it'll be just a pleasant part of the evening and won't be the highlight of the day. So if you really do love your dogs, folks, then give them an opportunity to learn to be a thinker and a figure outer and a troubleshooter and a creature that has a purpose, and that learning is a great pleasure to them and experiencing new things is a great pleasure to them. So that's a puppy thing that I've, you know, been dealing with some people with that I think is really, really important. Next topic is one that I've had. I'm going to kind of compile some different issues that I've had. I want to talk about for the retriever people and even the ones that aren't competing. I'm going to talk a little bit about water work, because for some reason people seem to feel that they should be able to, let me start over. What people do when you're doing water work, like everything else, for one, you want to keep things very simple in the beginning. You don't just dive in and start doing hard stuff. So you start with a young dog and you do something in the center of the pond so that they don't learn to run around the side or run all the way around until they decide, well, I guess there's no faster way, so I'll just get in. You throw it in the middle so they just go out and come back, and that's the easiest thing to do. So you take the very young dogs with just single retrieves and you teach them to go as directly at it as possible and then come directly back. Now that takes some time and some thought to teach that to a dog. So, you know, you can just chuck something out and it's easier for them to run around the side onto the far side, jump in, get it on the far side and come back. Now, if you compete, those of you who do, you know why you don't want dogs running around, because in competition, you're judged on going straight and not running around stuff. But I'll tell you why people who don't compete, I think that is also very important. When I train dogs that are never going to compete at all, they're just going to be people's gun dogs and they're going to hunt with them. I still do the exact same thing where I teach the dog a lot of diligence. Go at the bird and come back to me. As your default way of behavior. Don't sit there and go, let me see, can I take 5 minutes to go a dry route to get over there? I never let them do that. And there's the reason for that is, and let's just take the competing out of it, the hunting guys, right? If you ever are, you know, jump shooting ducks on a river or just where there's moving water or wind, right? If you have drop a duck in the water, in a river, right? It is moving down right now. And so if you have a dog who keeps the eye on the bird, then they are going to be the ones that are going to most easily learn how to do these river retrieves. Now, they may learn sooner or later to run a little further down and then go out and catch it. They'll vector in on it. But they have to learn that about moving water first. Also, if you have multiple things go down, and so they just looking all around at everything, and they're just looking for any dark thing in the water instead of the bird that they saw and go directly at it, then you can have a dog that's swimming around all over. They're going to miss the diving duck because it's not there, and they don't have that direct focus on stuff. So it's a very good skill when you begin to teach water work to dogs to be very, very simple and begin with, there it is out in the water, go straight out there and get it, and come straight back. So that's the first thing you do before you start any other type of stuff. When your dog does not handle, you do not have a tool in the water to keep them from just getting over on the shore and running along and jumping back in on the other side. If this is important to you. If it's not, then fine. But I still think it should be. You should teach young dogs as much due diligence as possible. Now, for those of you that hunt and there's ice and stuff, right? There's ice when you don't want a dog to get into ice water and swim straight in ice water. Absolutely. Then you go ahead and let the dog, or handle it or move it around or move yourself so the dog learns, yeah, when we got the ice water stuff, let's go another way. But to teach them, always look for the easiest way. Never do the most due diligence possible. And most of the time, if you're not hunting in, dangerous water with ice and stuff, you do want as much due diligence as possible. Hunting, you can get up and move. You can send the dog to another location and get them in. It's just always a good thing to start with dogs so that their mind is more on retrieving the bird than it is looking all over for the easiest, quickest way to get there. So when you want a dog that you can make go straight because of competitive stuff, or you do want a dog that handles so that when you're duck hunting and birds drop and the dog is in the blind and can't see them, that you can come up and get those things. So there's always the old rock throw. But if it sailed across the pond and it's 150 yards over, they probably can't get a rock that far. So the handling thing is very useful. So if you want to do multiples and if you want to be able to keep dogs off the shore or get them in or out wherever you need, then you need to teach them to handle and you need to do that in the water. Because they will handle on land does not rarely translates directly to the water. So handling in the water for dogs is generally a stay in or get out thing as opposed to the geometric handling that you have on land. So if you want dogs to handle in water, learn about the swim by. There are videos and all kinds of things out there. Preferably learn from someone real good at it. Personally, that would be the best way that you can. But you need to teach them some of the handling tools in the water before you can go ahead and do the handling in the water. Because I've watched people yelling and screaming and getting after dogs because they figure the dog should just know to take their cast in the water. But when you have never communicated to a dog about what a cast in the water actually means in terms of the dog's thinking, then the handling isn't going to go very well. Again, Pete, we tend to believe, when you throw up your hand at 45 degrees on a land blind or while you're handling, right, the dog should take 45 degree angle that way, whatever side you cast with. They should take it that way. And so people go to the water and assume that's the same thing. And it is not that way for dogs. Because get in a pond, put your eyes down there at eye level, and that doesn't exist. So your casts are always to the dog are going to be a stay in the water or a get out of the water thing. And you establish this communication and this language between the two of you on the swim by on the water force. So anyone having trouble in water that hasn't done that, you would really behoove you to go do that and make the whole water thing a whole lot easier. Just once you do it, you would never try anything other than that. Okay, one more question. On doing training for upland stuff during this summer, because most of the put and take places, most of the places, where you actually can go do the canned bird hunts and stuff like that, most of them don't open up during the summertime for that particular thing. Some do. I can't speak authoritatively on that, but it's far more difficult to do upland hunting in the summertime for obvious reasons. Temperature being number one, because it is hot. And upland hunting is where dogs are running off, often very vigorously through a field looking for birds. And when it's 80 or 90 or above out there, Okay, they get hot very rapidly. And so when they're hot and they're panting to cool themselves off and all the air is coming in through the mouth instead of the nose, they also aren't smelling birds either. And that can make it very difficult. Another thing is we tend to have maybe, you know, thicker grass and more cover and higher stuff. You know, out here in the West, we have this cheatgrass stuff and a lot of little dry, nasty seedling things that can easily get snuffed up a nostril or put into the eye pocket or go into an ear or go in between the skin and a toenail. And so those things, good Lord, if you haven't educated yourself about that, please do, because those things can kill dogs. I think when you talk to vets about it, it's called grass on. Right, so you can inhale some kind of seed or very fine needle-like thing off of a certain plant, and it can go right into your nasal passages. It can go into the brain. It can go into the lungs. And a lot of times when they get sucked into the lungs, then they kind of lodge in there, and then they get infected. And you don't know for quite a while that something is wrong with the dog until they get a kind of lethargic and they don't feel good or they have a fever. But you can't tell what's wrong. So many times it's been because a month ago or some weeks ago, the dog inhaled a grass on and it was slowly just doing some really bad things to him. I know some dogs that have had to have a lung removed or part of a lung removed because of an infection from one of those things. So what kind of field you run a dog in is very important. So if you don't know about this stuff, and I don't know if back east or up north, they don't have that problem or they do with these grassy things. Make yourself aware of it, because all it takes is just one little freaky deal and it becomes very expensive or very unfortunate circumstances that happen. So that makes it very tough when we have all of these grasses and seeds and things that are everywhere. So running your dog in that is just, don't do it. If that's all you've got, then don't train. It's that serious. So we've got lots of grass, thick grass, high grass. You know, out here, our sage is doing well. So we have a lot of sage and we have a lot of cactus. We have a lot of stuff. So it makes that very difficult. Can you train during this time of year in upland? Yes. I mean, I do. And I know a lot of people do. But you have to be aware, one, of all of the dangers. Right, so the temperature, the flora there, I mean, all the grass and what it can do to you. Some places where you train, you're going to have some snake problems. You know, down south, they have all kind of stuff down there that tries to kill you. So you have to be aware, of the dangers that would be out there. You know, obviously ticks in a lot of part of the country, so you can do the flea and tick thing, which is generally successful, but you can still get ticks even with that, some of these insidious things. So that's something you want to check for the next day to see if anything like that has happened. They have tick combs and stuff. So you have to be training in a field that isn't, you know, potentially dangerous to your dog. You also have to be training in the field that allows the birds to be detected. You know, if you have super thick CRP or something, the chances of a dog smelling that without stepping on it, you know, it's going to be very difficult. So you have to have a field where the cover is such that the dog from a distance away can smell the bird if they're not too hot. So, you know, where you put birds and what the cover's like is important. And if you have three clumps of weeds out in a big empty field, and that's where you put your three birds, now you're going to teach your dog to just run to clumps. So it's a tough thing, but you've got to find a place where it's reasonable and there's cover you can put them in that's not obvious, and that also the dog can smell the bird without having to be right on top of it. So that's another important part of that. The temperature. The hotter it gets, the harder it is on the dog. You have to water dogs. If you're in a place where it's dry, like out here, if you get them wet and keep them wet, you know, if you're in a humid place, that doesn't really help. It makes it worse because of the heat capacity of water. So if a wet dog in a humid place just holds the heat on them. So, you know, be aware of that. Ideally, if you have to train during the summertime, this is what I do, then do it at dark o'clock in the morning. Do it. I know life makes all of that tough, but you can't really train when it's, you know, 5 o'clock in the evening. Maybe, you know, maybe before the sun goes down, but it's still pretty hot. But the coolest time of the day is usually, you know, right at sunup. So if you just have a dog or two to go do, you know, take that little bit of extra time and train early in the morning because it's easier to scent. Everything is better. Dog overheating, all of that is a whole lot better. Also, sometimes if it's cool enough, some of the snakes and stuff aren't out yet. And so that's also helpful. So look at the time of day that you do this. Make sure you're in a field that's safe. If you have to cut back on the length of time you're out in the field or the number of birds you're putting out, it's worth it to still get some of the exposure done without endangering the dog or the situation. Or if you just don't have a large enough place to do it, you found a place where the dog, you can plant birds and the dog will be safe, but it's only, you know, a 5-acre field. Well, yeah, that's no good, but if that's what you've got, at least put a bird or two out there and work on that. So yes, you can train, but you really have to take into account temperature, hydration of your dog, and above all, the nasty things this time of year, all the way through almost hunting season, all those little things that can get into all kinds of, you know, they can get in their ears and go right into places they shouldn't go from the ears. So be real watchful about that, where you are with your dog. And if you cut down the time or the number of birds if you need to, but the bird exposure, if the upland stuff is important to you, that is important. So if you can find a way to do it with some consistency, you know, I like once a week. I don't like more than that. And that's just very helpful. So I hope that helps a little bit on the upland question. So I'm going to wrap that one up half hour today. I got to get my podcast voice going again. We're talking this longer period of time. So again, I want to thank all the people that have been very supportive and kind in the oddest, weirdest, June I've ever had in my life. And I appreciate people that, you know, appreciate good dog training and the people that have asked about this and have said the kind words. I'm deeply grateful and thankful for the good folks that are out there. I appreciate it very much. And I'm going to try and get right back on this thing at least every week. And I will for sure announce on here on the video things, but we put a ton of work into those and I feel pretty good about maybe helping people learn how to train the odd dog or the, you know, unusual dog or just the how the heck do you do this dog. So I look very much forward to that getting out for everybody. And I hope everybody is staying safe, healthy, and I will be back soon.